Hello and welcome back to Scottish Football Covered. This is, I think it's episode 11 since we rebranded. Obviously, as you can tell, this is not Stefan Carlin speaking, this is Mac. But I think Stefan's turned a bit into Lorraine Kelly. He's never here to host his own show. But I am joined with Scottish Football Covered stalwart Finlay Brown. Finlay, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Stalwart is a very, very nice one. Much nicer than, although I love Lorraine Kelly, I think that is true. Stefan is a bit of a diva on this show, but wish him well. Hope he's back soon.
No, I think you're due a compliment after some of the ones you've been giving me the last couple of weeks. But needless to say, I think we'll just jump right into it. Before we get into it, was a big weekend. We've got a lot to talk about. But before we get into that, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Celtic's European tie against Bayern Munich. Obviously, we're going to have its own feature at some point next week, I'm sure. But Finlay, it was a good, what a performance. I don't even think the staunchest of Celtic fans could have expected them to play as well as they did.
No, I think it was a case of like, we'll try go there, not basically get it handed to us. And then they were just essentially, I think they were better than Munich. They're not necessarily better in possession because I think Musiala, Sané, Gnabry, or any player that they bring on is so technically talented and the way they play through the lines is so impressive. But you could tell that they were rattled and they really didn't expect like Celtic to turn up away from home. So I was really impressed and it was like, it was heartbreaking the way they went out. And I think everyone felt that across any commentator across European football was feeling that, oh, that's terrible. But I think it's definitely more than anything, it's a sign that next year they're going to be in and amongst it. Essentially that I think that's what Brendan Rodgers wants from this.
No, exactly. I think that's what Brendan Rodgers said when he came in. His priority was improving them in Europe. I think he has definitely done that this season. But one thing is maybe no improved on is a dodgy record at Easter Road. I know he got a win there last season, but again, it's been a place where Brendan Rodgers hasn't had a lot of fun, and they never had any fun this weekend. Hibs 2, Celtic 1, Josh Campbell netted 2 for the home side before half time, before Diaz and Maeda got Celtic back into it in the second half. Finlay, that's Hibs up to 13 unbeaten now. You've been East, both of us were at Easter Road yesterday, but you were at Easter Road a lot more times this season than me. What do you think it is that David Gray has done to change their fortunes? Because they had such a bad start to the season, didn't they?
Well, first of all, I think he deserves an apology from me because at the start, I definitely had this feeling that he was a bit out of his depth. And I think that this is something, maybe a kind of toxic problem in Scottish football, is that clubs are so keen to give managers their first chance in what is one of the most cutthroat leagues in Europe. And I think it's unfair on the managers. And I think they could just maybe give it to someone a little bit more experience or be a little bit braver with their appointments. And I had that same feeling about David Gray, and I was completely wrong. He's absolutely turned things around. And you asked where I think that they've managed to change things. And there is a specific kind of moment, and that is when they go, and I think it's just before the Aberdeen game, after that Dundee 4-1 defeat, they switch from a back four to a back three. And I've been watching Hibs a lot this season, and the major difference is that freedom that it's given the Cadden twins, especially Nicky, who I think has been outstanding, not just as a player, but as a motivating figure for the club. But he has given so much space to run up and down and just terrorize teams and really stretch them. Fantastic crosses. He's brave in the tackle. And the back three essentially give him and, Chris Cadden, his twin, that security to just go forward and express themselves in an attacking sense. But I think that's also twinned with the introduction of Rocky Bashiri. And this is someone we'll talk about again, I'm sure. But he's emerged from out of nowhere, essentially. He's had a bit of a so-so career beforehand. He was floating around Belgium, had a spell with Norwich and Blackpool where he didn't make a mark. And it, be honest, because I personally can't remember hearing anything about him since he joined in 2022. And then out of nowhere, he's become that rock in Hibs side, and I absolutely love him as a player. I love his confidence, and I love the way he celebrates every tackle and every clearance like he just won the game in the 95th minute, which he almost did. He scored that 96th minute equaliser against Aberdeen, if you remember, for that 3-3. He's going to be a stalwart. I absolutely love him.
I think I was talking to some Hibs fans before the game as well. One of the, it just sums up Scottish football, this story. I'm sure like Hibs signed him by accident. There was like he was on loan, and they never realised it. They had a clause like if he plays X amount of games, we have to sign him. Hibs kind of forgot about that clause, and then he went back to, I think it was Wolves, and they were like, "No, you're not meant to be here anymore." But it's probably the best,
That sounds
accidental
absolutely right.
signing. Probably the best accidental signing in history. But guy, again, I think their defensive work yesterday, Hibs, even from the strikers, you had Martin Boyle and Bowie up front, and the way they were getting back and giving Celtic problems, then their ability to defend and then also press high and attack, David Gray really got it spot on. I'm going to talk about the first goal though. I don't want to make this too much a criticism of Celtic because I think Hibs deserve a lot of credit for the way they set up, but there's three players you could blame for that first goal right in the second minute as well. You've got Austin Trusty, who's way up the pitch, Callum McGregor, who's not dropped in, and Greg Taylor, who's not come across. So my question to you, Finlay, would be: who do you think is mostly blamed for that goal, or do you think it's a matter of all three?
The least responsible, it sounds odd to say, but it's maybe Trusty. Because when you play the way Brendan Rodgers wants his side to play, you expect rotations, you expect players to be in positions that you normally wouldn't find them in. And so if Austin Trusty goes forward, someone else has to fill in. That's how a kind of fluid side works. And so the way, I mean, Greg Taylor, I'm going to be honest, he had a stinker. Callum McGregor, there is that space in behind him. And it feels, if I'm not mistaken, he looks back to check if anyone's there. And maybe he just imagines that he's seen someone, but he should definitely be moving back or cutting off that pass. Who is more responsible? I'm gonna pin it on maybe Greg Taylor more than Callum McGregor, because Carter Vickers has his hands full because of that Martin Boyle run. So it's not really anything he could do without, leaving Boyle free. But yeah. Do you agree? I don't know if maybe I'm being too harsh on them.
No, I definitely do agree. I like what you're saying. Martin Boyle drives Carter Vickers out. I think Callum McGregor should have the spatial awareness to drop back a bit. But I think when Greg Taylor sees Austin Trusty that high out of pitch, he's got to cover. And then if he covers in, Hibs would then have to be maybe forced to play it wide, and you've got more chance of defending across rather than the 1-on-1. But alas, we could talk about Celtic's defensive troubles all day. Yesterday, they never really turned up in the first half, and then Josh Campbell scored early on in the first half, and then just before half time we got another one. It was a great header, but VAR, this is an example of VAR working correctly, as we'll get on to it later on. But the linesman gave it offside, and then there was a bit of a wait. But he's well onside. I don't know how it took so long for them to get a decision. Austin Trusty is playing him well onside, but 2-2 now, going at a break. Brendan Rodgers makes that triple change. Celtic get, but they never really, the chain subs never made that much an impact right away, but they did get that goal back through. Dyson Maeda comes off the Rehotati miss kick. Do you think Jordan Smith's got to do better? We mentioned in a few podcasts ago, Hibs should have been looking at a goalkeeper. I think they definitely will be in the summer. Jordan Smith has had a very good bit of form, but he's got to be doing better there, surely now.
Yeah, I think that was poor, and he was lucky to get away with that. The problem we'll talk about with the ball being out or not, he was lucky there. Just one of those where you expect your keepers are going to put their body on the line or be a little bit quicker, and he wasn't. And you're right, he has been good. And I think one of the things I was looking into was the difference between him and Bursic. And Bursic has 13 games, 22 conceded, 2 clean sheets. Smith in 14 games, 16 goals conceded. And 4 clean sheets. Now, I know that there's that difference between how Hibs have been playing as a team, but he is definitely an upgrade on Bursic, who is completely devoid of confidence and definitely needs more loans, maybe somewhere else. Couldn't really handle that pressure when things were going badly. But I think you're absolutely right. I think they will hopefully strengthen in the summer. And it's that difference that you see in Aberdeen when Mitov went out and Doolin came in. It's not a bad keeper, Doolin, but you can see that difference. And I think Hibs need their own Mitov. And I think they've got a little bit of cash, I suspect. And if they could get the jump on Jack Walton from Dundee United, they would do very well. Although Luton look like they're heading down to League One, so they might actually be needing him more than Hibs.
No, I agree. I think it's definitely a position they've got to be looking at. I don't think they've had that security in a number one probably since Marciano, which is quite a while longer than you
That's a
think ago
throwback.
now. Yeah, exactly. I feel as if Scotland fans will remember his name because we played Israel about 5 times in 2 weeks one year.
Yeah.
But I said the subs never made an immediate impact, but Jota almost did. Came from Hibs nearly getting a penalty. I don't think it is a penalty myself, but you might disagree. He runs the line for the park from that. I think he just sees his name in the headlines and takes a shot on himself. Looking at the replay, he should probably slip in Nicholas Kuhn. But we mentioned that I don't want to go into how good Rocky Bashir is again because we could give him his own podcast, but it's a brilliant clearance, it's brilliant awareness for the centre half, isn't it?
No, he Rocky Bashiri does it perfectly there, and I love it's even more poignant as a moment that he comes off injured after that. That's kind of like, you know, with his final breath, he gives Hibs like these incredible 3 points in that kind of Sunshine on Leith song. That's him, you know, his soul leaves his body kind of moment. Jota, however, I think he makes a dog's dinner of that. Really, either you just thump it in, but then you risk that chance. Maybe in his head, he's playing it over. Like, if I blast this, then that's even worse. Or you give it on to whoever's next to you. I think he got what you call in rugby white line fever, and he definitely did, should have done better. Although I am, and I think Brendan Rodgers will be sharing that. I don't know if you agree with this. A little bit of leeway given the midweek exit. I think it's kind of like you can forgive them for this one. It's just such an emotional, draining kind of moment that maybe it's actually okay to lose a game like this and just recover because they're playing on, I think it's Tuesday next. So maybe just a bit, it's a bit harsh for us to kind of dig into players who've just had their hearts ripped out.
No, I think you're right to say that. I think as well when you take it into consideration, at that time they were 13 points ahead. Also, they still are. We'll get into that in a minute. But I think, and then after the European, I don't want to say heroics because obviously they lost the tie, but the performance, you're right to get them and probably cut them a bit of slack. And aye, they probably did because they did leave it all in the Allianz, which is a shame. But not a shame for the Hibs fans. The big talking point, though, Easter Road has probably dominated the headlines across the country on such a big weekend. Should Celtic have had an equaliser? I don't think it's more the point, was the ball in or was the ball out? I think people's attention has now went to, should VAR have intervened? Because we've still not seen a conclusive photograph that tells anyone if it's in or out. For those who've been living under a rock, guys may either got an equaliser, it stood at the time. VAR then intervened and said when Arthur Johnson crossed the ball into him, it was out of play. But there's just no images to suggest VAR that it was this clear and obvious error, saying clear and obvious in quotation marks error. So what was your take on the matter?
I get Brendan Rodgers' point about don't intervene if it's not clear and obvious, but I don't know. To me, it looks so much like it is out. And I think if that stands as a goal, people would be asking a lot of questions. And this was a point that I wanted to make as well, was that if this had happened and Hibs had got a goal and VAR hadn't intervened, basically the pressure that Celtic exert, I think, on officials in the aftermath of decisions like these is so much greater. They have such a big influence on decision makers because of the stature of the club. And it's the same with Rangers, that it creates this storm that would die down pretty quickly for every other club. But because of the nature of how big they are, it goes on for such a big, like a long period of time. And I think it starts to impact the officials in the league. And it's not a conspiracy or anything. It's just, they always, and that's what you would do if you're a smart manager. You try and play these little mind games so that the next time that happens, the VAR official is going to go, I don't know. If I intervene now, I'm going to get it from Celtic fans in a way that I would never get it from Hibs fans because of the difference in kind of online presence and fandom. So I just think it's not necessarily the biggest point in the world, but I again understand Roger's frustration with the clear and obvious bit.
Aye, because Brendan Rodgers came out in his interview and he said it outright. He thinks Alan Muir on VAR took a guess at it. And this is the same Alan Muir who was at the centre of controversy with the Rangers penalty that they never got in the cup final. So it goes both ways. Me personally, I think it's just poor officiating. I think it's VAR trying to be centre of attention. I said after the game, I think if the linesman said it was out, VAR might have said it was in. I just think they're so desperate to just have an impact and disrupt the flow of the game. I personally, I would have went with the linesman's call. He's closer. He has a better view of it than any camera that VAR has. So, but look, it's done now. This win, it's a big win for Hibs. You saw how well they celebrated it, and it's the perfect pick me up. Well, not pick me up. It's the perfect way to go into their Edinburgh derby at Easter Road next week, and then they're actually playing Celtic again in the Scottish Cup quarter final at Celtic Park, and they played really well at Celtic Park. I know they could beat 3-0, but Casper Schmeichel ended up getting man of the match, so it's a perfect win, and you just expect this form of 13 unbeaten to maybe go into 14, maybe 15, we'll see. But you think the Celtic losing, that would be all the impetus their Glasgow rivals Rangers would need to perhaps rejuvenate their title hopes. But for the first time, I don't know if you know this, Finlay, it's the first time since 2018 both the Glasgow sides have lost on the same day slash weekend. Hibs were actually involved that time. They beat Rangers and Celtic lost to Kilmarnock. But this time, Rangers were losing to St Mirren. They lost 2-0. Goals from Mikael Mandron. By the way, what a start to the year. Mikael Mandron's had these in such good form. And Toyosi Olasanya, both in the second half, give St Mirren their first win at Ibrox since 1991. And it's the first time they've beaten Rangers twice in one league campaign since 1979 and 1980. Stephen Robson's third year as St Mirren manager, you would think Philip Clement is not going to get anywhere near 3 years, wouldn't you, Finlay? We've just spoke off air about the story that's broke from the Daily Record that he looks set to be sacked. Do you believe that?
Yes, because I think, albeit the Record are not my first port of call for news, that it's a big story and it's not one that they would print and then go back on without some justification. I mean, am I right in saying that they broke the story on the 49ers? Is that them?
Yes, I think you are. And then Chris Jack posted about it, and then that's when it kind of picked up arms and legs.
So whichever member of the Record is in the Rangers boardroom with a fake mustache and a pair of sunglasses on, he seems to be have like seems to have fairly good information, whoever it is, that actually makes it sound like it's me and I'm just trying to cover it. That's not the case. But there seems to be some truth for it. I mean, I also told you before we started recording that I'd written that there's no way they sack him. They can't afford to sack him. You, and I was thinking you're better off waiting for the new board to come in, or not new board, but new owners. The season's a write-off. Just spend the time working out how much money you have and scouting out potential managers, because the top two is guaranteed, and you've got Europe to play for. That I've kind of torn that up. It's a bold move if it's true, because first of all, who'd you bring in? Apparently, you're skint. I don't know if that money's in the bank already. The options are slim at this time of the year. You definitely would rather wait till the summer while all the managers have finished their seasons to have your pick of the bunch, if you have your pick of the bunch. Then you've got time to just have the whole summer rather than throw someone into a squad that's totally dysfunctional, give them until the end of the year to kind of lose maybe some players in the dressing room before they've had the chance to start and build. So it's an odd one. More likely than not, if he's sacked, we'll get an interim, I think, until the end of the year, and that'll be someone from the club. But yeah, I don't. I'm. Maybe it's just so untenable that they had no other choice. We talked about that Queen's Park result. Do you think it's the right thing to do at this time of the year?
Well, I think it probably should have been done earlier to try to save their season, but I think at this stage, you've got to just accept the season's been a write-off. But then it's, you worry, are you letting the standards slip if you let it continue? But what I thought they would have done, obviously there's this rumour of the new investment. I've actually not had this confirmed. Apparently, Ibrox was playing Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen, so you'd imagine if that's true, the deal must be close, but you'd think you'd wait till the new owners came in and then let them. Well, maybe that is what they're doing, and they're getting an internal appointment for an interim manager and then letting the new owners have their idea. But at this stage of the season, I think it's a bit redundant if you change the manager or not, to be honest. I think the season's gone and Rangers have kind of accepted that. But What I was going to say, a lot of people have said, like, they think because Celtic lost that game, Rangers lost that game, and it's just it's a mentality issue. You saw it in the first half. Butland made that mistake, he had no pressure, and he just kicked it straight to, I think it was Oyunga, that created the chance for St Mirren at an hour. And then in Siala, he was arguably at fault for two of the goals, especially the second goal. Do you think the players have to step up a bit more for Rangers, or is that, as I said, in Siala and Butland, is that just an example of poor recruitment from the manager and the board?
Yeah, they absolutely do have to step up. Jack Butland had a massive bit of brain weight. Like, I don't know what came over him to make that pass. I would say recruitment is not necessarily the problem this year. It's been the problem in the past few seasons. They made the wrong choices. They spent on players they can't turn a profit on. And when they did turn a profit on players like Calvin Bassey and Joe Aribo, they spent that money badly. They let Morelos go on a free when they could have had money for him. So basically, they've been these four or five steps behind Celtic the whole time. The signings they made this season, I actually wouldn't count Clinton Nsiala as one of them because I don't think he was meant to be playing this year. He was in the B team until the injuries and it all hit the fan. And I know he had a stinker in this game, but I think he is in his, let's not forget, he's in his first season of senior football, like senior appearances. And on top of that, he's been thrown into the deep end in a Rangers side that was struggling. I think he's made Proper, who's been next to him, a better player, or at least more assured. However, and it's, with Jack Butland, he's had a bad season and maybe he's not recovered from that cup final. But I will say that he is a good keeper. And when he is missing, that difference in quality shows. And as much as it was nice to see Liam Kelly play, and I like Liam Kelly the person, I think he's not a bad keeper by any stretch. I think Butland, that's not where you should be spending your money. You should be keeping Jack Butland at least a year because he's still only 31. And back to Clinton. I say Clinton like he's my friend. He was poor and he was completely outplayed by Adesanya. And hopefully he doesn't spend too much time rewatching that first one back either because it was a little bit embarrassing. But he's still learning. He's a very young defender under a lot of pressure. I think he will be given that space and time because there's a fantastic player in there. And I predict it, and I'm happy to be called back on it in a couple of years. But I think he'll be in a top five league before too long. But in terms of, you mentioned the players who need to step up, there's going to be a big squad overhaul. And if they can keep Nsiala and Eggermann and drive up their value, then hopefully they can make a start on competing with Celtic again because I think the league needs it. I mean, if you see it the way I see it, Brendan Rodgers essentially is a little bit of he can't wait for the Champions League to start again because the league is not really his bread and butter. He expects to win that at a canter, and I think that would be so much more interesting for not only fans in the league but for Brendan himself. Challenging him is to have a competitive Rangers.
No, I think I agree with you on the Brendan Rodgers comment. Obviously, that, which is now an iconic comment, I'll see you here in May to the Celtic fans that doubted him. One of the players you mentioned there, Hamza Egerman, he got sent off just late in the first half. Is that an example of VAR? Well, no, it is an example of VAR doing its job correctly. The red card got intervened. I can see why Kevin Clancy got a red card because it looks bad from the angle seen in sports scene. And then once you get all these multiple replays, you can tell he's made a mistake. Is that just proof that the tool is not the issue, it's the people manning it? Would you agree?
I would agree with you to a certain extent. I think I've never loved VAR. It has made a difference, but I think it's also taken away from the autonomy of referees and their confidence to trust their ability. And maybe the standard of referee needs to be higher before you can kind of leave them to their own devices. But it's the point I made earlier. It's they get hammered so often that it can't help but impact their decision making. There's no way it doesn't play in their minds. But they made the right call here, and it's good to see. As long as I think the decisions are quick and they're correct, that's all people kind of ask for, and there's a way to streamline that. But you're right, it is a case of VAR gone good in this game.
I had a look at St Mirren's fixtures up until the split. They've got obviously got Celtic at home on the Saturday late Saturday kickoff next week. A lot of the teams are playing are in the same sort of fight, and then if they can keep ride the momentum of the performances they're getting from the guys like Olesanya, Mark O'Hara, guys like them, I really don't see a world where they don't get top six on paper. Also, I think it's the late great Brian Clough that says, unfortunately, the game's played on grass. But do fancy St Mirren for top six? I know the league is as tight as whatever, but do you see them getting top six?
I think you're right. That fixture list is, barring Celtic, it's very kind. Those are all opponents that they would face. It's Motherwell, Kilmarnock, Dundee, and Ross County. If they can get through Hearts unscathed, they should, like you said, on paper, have a very good chance. But I personally don't see it for them this year. I think Hearts take that sixth spot. I think Hibs have it as well. I think Aberdeen and Dundee United will all be there. And the way St Mirren have been so poor in recent months, I'd be surprised. The last two games, I don't know, I'd be surprised if they picked up half the points on offer from those remaining games. I think the other teams are too strong. Not that not finishing in the top six is the end of the world for them, because they've done, let's be, I think they've punched to be in the top six, and Stephen Robinson's done a fantastic job in getting them there. I just think that maybe that run of form, that loss of form even, is going to be a big problem for them, and I just don't think they squeeze it.
I think one of the unique things about this season, though, is the battle for the top six. The teams who don't get into the top six are automatically in this fight for the 11th playoff spot, because it's just the league is so tight. I think Dundee are on, is it 27 points, and then
Yeah.
the rest of the teams are on like 31, 32. So it is going to be a great end of the season. It's the beauty of the split. The split's got its criticisms, but that is one of the beauties of it. One of the teams that are going to be battling out with Ross County, I've just spoiled it there. One of the teams that are going to be battling out for West St Mirren is Ross County. They further state they're going for a top six finish after they defeated Dundee 3-1 at home. It was their first 3 points in Dingwall since November, and they were made to work for it, though. Simon Murray against his former club with a screamer. Did you get a chance to see it?
I did. It was incredible. And I love Simon Murray. He's one of my favourite players in the league. And I think he's the kind of player that could make himself like an established club legend from a single Soccer Aid match. He is that committed. I think people just, if he's on your team, there's no way you can't help yourself but love him. He works so hard. He's so passionate. And he scores screamers like that. Apart from him, Dundee was naff. I was so baffled by them as a squad.
Aye, no, I agree. They're one of the, well, I think they used to be one of the most unpredictable teams in the league. Now you just expect them to concede. They're conceding by the dozen, quite literally. Hearts beat them 6-0, Celtic beat them 6-0. It's just, you've got to worry about Dundee, surely. They've seemingly out of nowhere dropped to 11th. Do you see them turn that around?
I don't know. I think it's odd because they had those three games where they held Rangers, should have beaten Celtic, beat Dundee United, and they were world beaters, and then they go and concede, I think, 17 goals in about five games, which is abysmal. You know, we mentioned a new keeper for Hibs, but I think Tony Doherty would probably bite your face off for one of his own. I would say at this point, I think they would beat a championship side in the playoff. That's where I think Dundee fans can take kind of some solace. Whereas I don't know if the same is true for Ross County. And I think maybe, you know, you mentioned the amount of away games, and I think they deserve some credit because it felt, I mean, we were talking not that long ago when it felt like 1,000 days since their last away win. And then all of a sudden, they turn into the Harlem Globetrotters, and they just go from city to city, and they're just absolutely dunking on people. And I have no idea. And then at the same time, they forget how to win at home, which was one of the only reasons they're still in this league, is because of the fact that people probably hate traveling up to Dingwall. They hate playing on that pitch, and as soon as it starts raining, you just want to go home. And again, you mentioned that point. If you're not in the top six, you're in a relegation battle, which is so odd. That marginal difference can make or break a season. It could be goal difference in just a few weeks that does it. But that will be the difference between a manager being in the press as genius, top six, we never saw it coming, and He's in a dogfight. His position's not secure. Sack him. And that is going to come down to goal difference, which is one of the best parts of this league.
You kind of took my next question away from me. What I was going to say was, what do you think is behind it? But you kind of lead to it there. They're turning fortunes on the road. You compare them to the Harlem Globetrotters. I think
The
the Harlem
fastidious Premier
Globetrotters will be blushing at that comparison. But the Keenan Phillips got his first goal since he signed from Huddersfield in January. Then it was Akil Wright's overhead kick. The right wing back went overhead kick to put Ross County 2-1 up just after half time, and then 2 minutes later, they made it three. I was going to say, if I was on last week, which I couldn't make, I think the difference between Ross County is when Ronan Hale doesn't score, they don't really play that well or get the results. But they'd obviously, he never scored today, and Ronan Hale was influential in one of the moves. Ronan Hale turning at that sort of playmaker and goal scorer, I think that's going to be the difference between 6th and 7th for Ross County, if I'm being honest. But moving on, another team who've been digging themselves out of trouble many times this season is Aberdeen, the Sheep up in Pittodrie, and they've done so again. A late winner, 1-0 victory over Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock obviously managed by former Dons boss Derek McInnes. Odey Dabber, that's his first goal since signing for Aberdeen. That's another January signing, getting a first goal. Only played 2 minutes in the last game, which I think was again against Dundee. I hope we don't get any Dundee fans listening. But he netted a late winner. What a goal, by the way. It looks like it just taps into an empty net, but on the spin and lifting over the goalkeeper, it's a brilliant goal in a great way to mark your account at Aberdeen, finally.
No, I think that was incredible. First of all, I'd like to go back to calling them the Sheep, because I was going through their list of nicknames and I found three, which were the Dons, the Dandies, and the Reds. Not that anyone calls them the kind of the last two, but I didn't find the Sheep in that list, so I don't know where you pulled that from, but I
Finally,
like
if you don't know what the sheep means, it's
I
better you
don't
don't
worry.
know. You'll find
I
it.
know why it's called that, but I was just wondering if they ever referred to themselves as that.
Well, I've
Seems
seen them. I've seen their away ends with inflatable sheep, so
like...
I'm gonna call them it.
But braver than me. I mean, luckily they're too far away to do anything about it. But yeah, no, you're right. I was, I'm impressed. I'm kind of happy for Aberdeen because I think Jimmy Tilleen is a good manager, not only for Aberdeen, but a good appointment for the league. We saw in the first 10 games he brings something a little bit different, and he was indicative of a different approach to the hiring of managers. And I didn't like that run because I didn't feel like it was Jimmy Tilleen. I felt like the players lost that spark and they completely lost confidence, so much so that players like Rubizic were just shipped off on loan because he had such a stinker of a game that he asked, I think he, I'm going to be honest, I think he asked to come off. I don't think he was injured. And Jimmy Tilleen seemed to suggest that as well in his last one. And what he's done is absolutely gutted that side and brought in Ockels, Dorrington, Keskinen, Dabber, you mentioned Jensen, Tobers, and now Stutter. He just completely changed that squad. He went, if you're not able to do it, I'll bring in someone else who can. And then there's the return of Papagay is so important. He hasn't scored, but I think these players, although they weren't super convincing against Kilmarnock, which I'm sure you'll be able to kind of touch on as well, they just got it done. And two wins in a row is massive considering how bad they've been in recent months.
No, it is, and I think a new signing, bringing that goal and bringing the 3 points, is maybe just a lift that everybody needs. Do my notes for this, I never realised Odey Dabber was actually the record signing for, no, the record goal scorer for Palestine, which is an interesting stat. You can take that for your pub quiz later, Finlay, if it
If,
comes
you
up.
know what? I hope it does. That quiz host absolutely despises football, but he always manages to include a question. So I might jot that down right now. Thank you.
No worries. And then Kilmarnock shown no consistent. The only thing they've been consistent at this season has been inconsistent. It's just you don't. I keep saying the word unpredictable about this league, but they are generally so unpredictable. It's another loss. Do you think Derek McInnes hit a ceiling with a squad when he got them out of Europe and won manager of the season? Do you think he can take them any further? He's out of both of the cups already.
Yeah, you make a good point here. And Derek McInnes is a very ambitious manager is how I would describe him. He definitely sees himself, rightly or wrongly, as one of the better ones in this league. And not so long ago before this run, his name, however that came about, was linked with the Rangers job. And in part, that's because every player who played for Rangers in the past is a candidate. But probably because Marley Watkins and Vassell, Darius Vassell, that is, are nothing like they were last season. So they were really the driving forces of this squad. And some of the players have impressed me, like Bobby Wales, Bruce Anderson, and Matty Kennedy. If you can keep them, you'll maybe get close to top six. But you touched on something that's very true, and that's if he's hit a ceiling, and that's, I would say, maybe, because what more, they don't necessarily have the funds to just rejig that side. They're not going to be able to sell players for very much money, and all they'll be able to do is maybe get a couple of loans and maybe get a couple of free transfers, but maybe he'll have just had enough and maybe he'll want to move on to a club that doesn't seem better, but maybe has a little bit of a bigger kitty. And I wanted to talk about something else, and this is maybe selfishly, as someone who supports Scotland, and that is wanting to see between now and the end, if they confirm bottom six, is Calvin Ramsey just getting a run out? Because he had two games and they haven't been the easiest for him. But I think he's a talent, and it would be a shame if he ended his loan spell. Just another one for him. He's had disappointing ones. I think it's Wigan and Preston and Bolton, where it's not really gone his way. But I wish him all the best, because it's not something you like to see as young Scottish players falling by the wayside when they had so much promise.
No, definitely. I've got a special place in my heart for Calvin Ramsey. They mentioned the word stalwart. He was a stalwart for my Newcastle side and Football Manager 22, I think it was. So
He would need a compliment like that at the moment, so maybe send
exactly.
him a little message.
Hopefully, well, hopefully he's listening. Maybe he's listening, Finley. You never know.
He might be a gold subscriber, that's true.
Well, we were speaking about Derek McInnes. Speaking of managers, Motherwell finally got their replacement for Stuart Kettlewell, who left under a bit of clouds. Well, I think a bit of clouds, a bit of an understatement, but regardless, it was Austrian Michael Wimmer. It was a bit of an outside appointment, which I'm a fan of, but he made his de dugout debut for Motherwell as they travelled to Tannadice. Fortunately, they lost 1-0 for Wimmer, but what sort of job do you think Michael Wimmer has on his hands at Motherwell?
Massive. I think it's I it was insane to me that not long ago they were in the top six and favorites to stay there, because I've never watched them play and thought that's a good side. I think they always, in a similar way to Dundee United, although Dundee United have done it a lot better, is relied on special moments and relied on players taking their chances, and they have players who can do that. They had, Lennon Miller, fantastic player. And I'd be surprised if he was there in the summer, but like Tawana Maswanise is a terrific signing. There's something wrong with that squad. I can't put my finger on it. It's just so uninspiring. The wingers aren't fast. The defenders aren't confident or brave. The midfielders, for the most part, are not creative. They made about eight signings in January. Seven of those were goalkeepers. But yeah, to go back to Michael Wimmer, they were not the manager's players. He never signed any of them. And so they must be accepting their fate now that they're not going to be in the top six. If he can get that summer, then maybe the start of next year we'll see what he's actually like as a manager, because they, Motherwell fans, like it or not, I think the second half of the season is a write-off for them. They would be lucky. They are now near that playoff spot, and I think they would be lucky to kind of win half their games with the ones that are left.
I think one of the issues at Motherwell as well, it's important to have experience in your squad, but their experienced players and characters are particularly to respect. I don't want to disrespect them because they've had glittering careers, some of them, but Tony Watt, Andy Hardy, Stephen O'Donnell, they were undoubtedly all good players, but I think now, I don't know, they're just not performing for me. But a player who is performing and performing well, Sam Dalby, the Dundee United talisman. He got another goal, he got a winner, which it turned out to be. He's now two goals clear as the top goal scorer. He's going to be important to anything Dundee United do from now to the end of the season. But do you think just due to his success, he's going to be unaffordable for Dundee to sign on a permanent transfer from Wrexham.
I would say absolutely, yes. If Wrexham won today, and I think they're on, they're at least definitely on course for a playoff game, not necessarily the top two. There's still a way to go because I think Wickham are ahead of them. But if they don't get promoted, maybe they'll give him a chance. If they get promoted, the amount of goals he scored, a championship team might want to take a punt on him because if Lyndon Dykes is playing regularly for Birmingham, I don't see why Sam Dalby couldn't play for like a team in the top of League One or, around there and abouts in the championship. Dundee United, first of all, I don't think can afford him. Second of all, I would be surprised if at least another club in that top six, not Celtic or Rangers, but another one of those clubs, didn't at least inquire and go, hey, by the way, how much do you want for him? And just snatch him from Dundee United, which would be the source of a lot of acrimony and would create some interesting rivalry for the next season. But I don't, unless he thinks personally this, oh, this must be good for my development and I should stick around, which might be the right thing for him to do. I don't see why he would, because he's not a player who's desperate for minutes or something. He's kind of mastered his game and all the things that he is good at. It's just a case of where can he play and earn money now. I think he's done the development bit of his career, and I don't think that's going to continue at Dundee United.
You mentioned Lyndon Dykes. I'm sure, somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure he left Livingston for about £2 million. I'm sure that was a rumour three. So,
Yeah,
Rex,
for QPR, is it?
yeah, because he did.
He's got one goal this year. I mean,
Exactly, but I think at the time he just had a kind of goal-laden spell for Livingston before that move. But it's just a good example of Rex and playing the loan market well, loaning out a guy who's not going to play for you, and then eventually turning a fee. But I'd be surprised. We saw a lot of talk about Rangers linked with Shankland. I would be surprised if you mentioned maybe no Celtic or Rangers. Rangers could do worse than Sam Dalby, but the new ownership, there's no point predicting anything, and they've kind of got the goals coming through Igamani now. But Tannadice was the last of the Saturday action. There was one game today. We'll also be recording Sundays. Sky Sports showcased McDermott Park's clash between St Johnstone and Hearts, which the home side bottom of the league, and they lost by 2-1 to Heart of Midlothian. Kabangu with a double. The first one's a tight call. Have you seen it? It's very tight, but ultimately it comes down to that. Are we sure if we're making the right decision? I know we've spent a lot of time moaning about VAR, but do you think they made the right call?
I would say so. I think he was onside. Wait, how are you? So he was. That was the first one, right? It was a kind
Yeah,
of
talk about
yeah.
the because there's another one coming up later. But yeah,
Yeah.
Kabangu go first.
Yeah, I think he was onside. I don't think there was too much complaining after. It feels like one of those that. Do you feel like it could have gone either way?
It's just the unfortunateness of the angles. I think it's just if it's just a maybe an inch or two more to the side, you can maybe get a better view on it, but. Like, striker's instinct, he was in the right place at the right time, and he's got the benefit of the doubt. Another good goal from Adam Sidibe, equalised for St Johnstone, I should say. And then just after Adam Sidibe got the equaliser, Craig Gordon with a brilliant save. He's a guy who came under a lot of criticism lately, so that was a brilliant save. And then just like that, Hearts went up the park, and Kabangu scored another one. Any second goal, there's no controversy or anything. It's just a great finish. He never had the greatest of times against Rangers last week at Tynecastle, which was also on Sky. Was that composure from Kabangu, what was the difference between a result against Rangers, perhaps?
I think so because Hearts had about. I mean, we talked about this last time, and the commentators were saying it should have been 10-3 Hearts, which, was not true necessarily, but it raises a good point, and that was that Kabangu maybe fluffed his lines a little bit on the day, and he certainly didn't today or at the time of recording, whatever that is, on the Sunday. He could have done better, but what's more impressive is that maybe he came back from that. And he responded from a difficult day with two goals, which is something that a lot of strikers maybe struggle to do. So I think he deserves credit for that. And I don't think, I think maybe the Rangers loss was not the end of the world for them, and they'll have learned a lot from that.
Yeah, similar to the point David Gray made, they lost to Celtic, they earned a lot from it. Hearts would have learned a lot from that loss to Rangers when they probably should have won the game. And well, they get a big win at McDermott Park today. It's piling on the misery for Vlachery and St Johnstone. But were they robbed of a point at least? Dre Wright scored it's a great header, by the way. I think it clips off the bar as well. This is just, I think this is another example of VAR guessing. You just don't really get the right angle on it. What do you think?
Maybe the lesson here is about where the kind of people at the SFA are putting their cameras or whoever runs this.
I definitely.
Maybe it's just like they need someone to just put an extra camera or even a GoPro, because this seems to be the running theme of the week is couldn't really see. It's not like you're short on kind of options to put the camera. And again, I wouldn't be able to say it wasn't a goal. And maybe there is that element of fear that we've talked about denying it and the repercussions of denying something that's not a certainty. But on the whole, Hearts deserved a win, regardless of whether or not that goal should have stood or not.
Yeah, on the basis of play, probably. Hearts, well, they deserve victors, and just it looks quite bleak for St Johnstone. They're the only team out of all the teams that aren't quite getting the points, and I can send them to the Championship many moons ago, but it looks more inevitable, really. But that wrapped up this weekend's Scottish Premiership action. What Finlay doesn't know is I've actually done a Guess the Career Path quiz for him, though. So this podcast is not done. Finlay, are you aware of how Guess the Career Path works? I'm going
Yeah,
to
I've
end.
done one on this podcast before
Oh,
for
there
a
we
friend of
go.
mine,
Wait,
Alistair.
there we go. So I'm going to. It's a, I'll get the only clue I'll give you now. This guy is a Scottish international, but it could be current or it could be former. I'll not give that away. But he is a Scotland international, right? So I'll read out his first club. And you can guess at any time. I'll give you
Okay.
a couple of seconds after every club and you can just chime in.
Okay.
So he started his career at Celtic. Then he would move on loan to Norwich, which would then become
Okay.
permanent.
Wait.
Do you think you've
No, I'm running the options.
From
Okay,
Norwich,
keep
he
going, keep
would
going.
move to Cardiff City.
Oh.
From Cardiff, he would then move to Hull City.
I'm
From
not.
Hull City, he would move to Wigan Athletic.
Wait, I know.
You know, it's
Is it Sean Maloney?
no, it's not Sean Maloney. It's not Sean Maloney. From Wigan, he would move to Derby. Then from Derby, he had a. I never knew he actually played for this team. Queen's Park Rangers, and then he would make his final move of his career at Hibernian.
It's so much, you know what I realize is it's so much difficult on the other end. Now, I used to follow QPR a little bit, so I'm trying to think Scottish players who've
Made
played for them.
40, 47 caps for Scotland, and then I'll give you a clue since you're not getting it. He was in the Scotland squad at Euro 2020. But not 24.
What's gonna, oh, wait. Oh, this is a keeper. Is this David Marshall?
It is David
Yeah.
Marshall.
Okay.
There we go.
Hey, you know
Well,
what? That was shocking. I my version was so much harsher. And what I did was I gave Alistair the list. I just gave it 5 points. And I usually picked a club that because he's a St Mirren supporter, but by the fifth club, he always landed at St Mirren. And I would take off a point for every time he wanted to move forward. Which was so harsh, and I did pick kind of quote unquote kind of club legends, but yeah, the one you just did was a lot easier, and I still kind of it took me a little bit. I just didn't think of keepers. I kept thinking of players. I was like running through the list of like who's it trying to remember, and now and see even now I've just forgot Grant Hanley. So, you know, you just think of players that are like who has played for
Just gonna
these kind
stick
of
to one
clubs.
club. I know what you mean. See, I think it's harder. Soon you look, see the badges. I always watch them on YouTube. They're so much easier when you've got the badges in front of you.
Yeah.
But I think we're digressing a bit. I'll wrap this up. Thank you for listening to this episode of Scottish Football Covered. Please follow us on all our socials and keep your eyes peeled for our European feature. It might be coming next week, maybe the week after. And hopefully Stefan is back next week, but if not, it'll be myself or Finlay and the rest of the gang. But have a nice evening and good night.